And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road back in the house. Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Paul Kuharsky has been with us the last 2 days. Rex Road will be with Paul Kuharsky later today on our fine radio station. But first, he's back with us this morning. Joseph, how are you doing? What's going on?
Doing all right. 9 straight days in New York and back in the state of Tennessee. Got away from those freaking liberal Yankees.
You did.
Yeah.
And Grimace.
What's that? Grimace?
Yeah. Have you not seen this trend?
No. I haven't even seen it. I don't know what you're talking about.
So the Mets.
Is this TikTok?
No. The Mets had Grimace throw out the first pitch. No. And ever since he's been around, I think the Mets were 6-0, 7-0, and then they finally lost yesterday, I think.
Okay.
So I didn't know that you would miss something like that.
Oh. Yeah, I completely did, but I appreciate you bringing that to my attention.
Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you. But I was distracted here because up on this program that just said that the world's oldest wine was found in Spain.
I guess so. Yeah, I did see that.
Interesting.
And then it looked like they went in there and opened it. Well, I'm like, just leave it alone, man.
Yeah, I mean, how
what
good,
are we doing?
How good could it be in another century, you know?
We got a lot to get to on the program here today. Tennessee punching their ticket to the College World Series Finals. An all-SEC matchup, Tennessee-Texas A&M. We'll get into that here in just momentarily. A goalie trade yesterday in the National Hockey League. A couple of different trades in the NHL. We will get into that, what that means for the Nashville Predators and more. And as always, take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports normally joins us on Thursdays. He is in Croatia for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, good for him.
That's quite a vacay.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple weeks in Croatia. So, it's that time of year. Where'd Stilly go? I saw that Caroline Fenton is, like, in some amazing, like...
She was in Paris yesterday.
Okay. So. Well, I saw, like, these... It was, like, one of those tweets with, like, 4 pictures. And then it looked like Paris, but then it was, like, wait, are you at a tropical beach?
Yeah. She's been to, I think, a couple different places. So, good for her.
Yeah. Well, how about Stilly? Where's Stilly?
Stilly texted me live from the Edmonton, Florida game the other night. So
okay.
He just randomly decided to go. So he's somewhere down there in Florida.
I think he goes to the Miami area. Yeah. By the way, so I'm with PK from 1 to 3, right?
I believe that is correct.
That's an interesting time. So we're just doing like the first hour of Stilly?
Well, yeah, basically.
Yeah, they've done our normal show, Chase and Big Joe this week have been 9 to 12.
I knew that.
And then Willie's done 12 to 3.
Okay, so they've done an extra hour also.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for catching me up.
You're welcome.
Cool.
Welcome back to the program. It's good to be here. Tennessee winning the game yesterday against Florida State. We knew, I said it yesterday, Joe, of the two possibilities, if you're a Tennessee fan, you were probably pulling for North Carolina in the Florida State North Carolina matchup, just based on Florida State's lineup and how dangerous they are. But Florida State took down North Carolina. Tennessee handled business anyway yesterday, 7-2, the final score. Now, Florida State ripped a couple of balls yesterday that either were right to Tennessee or Tennessee made some great plays defensively on. So it was a really good day defensively for the Vols, but their lineup comes through again. They hang up 7 on Florida State, and they punched their ticket to the College World Series final. So it's gone about as smoothly as it can go for the Tennessee to this point. They punched their ticket to the College World Series final yesterday. They're 3-0. A few more days off here now before they take on Texas A&M on Saturday. But your thoughts on Tennessee's win yesterday once again against Florida State? No check swing controversy this time.
Yeah, pretty impressed. I mean, Xander Seacrest, there's a lot of storylines for a team that's about to play for a national championship. But Xander Seacrest and the end of his career at Tennessee, a guy who's, again, he's never pitched in Omaha before because he's kind of like one of those, you know, reliever who probably comes in when you're, like, down 4 or, you know, like he's just sort of a middle reliever guy. He pitched in some big moments in past years, but he's all of a sudden a super reliable, excellent starting pitcher and just a crafty left-hander. He's not really a pro prospect like a lot of these Vols are, especially through that ridiculous lineup. But it's just a huge story of what he did to get them to Omaha and now this. And we might also it might all end on Monday night with Xander Seacrest with the ball in his hand with a chance to win a national championship. If it gets to that, you know, that third and deciding game, he's on the mound. So just fantastic performance by him. You're right. There were some shots. There was another Vol smashing into a wall with a great catch.
Get some pads out there,
right?
Some helmet.
Yeah, and that got number 6 on the ESPN. So I think that got higher than Ensley's, which I think is wild.
Yeah,
it was very good, but it wasn't Ensley's.
No.
And yeah, the Vols also actually had some defensive gaps. But I coached some T-ball teams, starting probably with my oldest, you know, in probably about 2008, about 16 years ago. Those teams understood the principles of base running better than Florida State does.
Wasn't great.
I'm convinced of it.
Was not good.
Like, you have a high chopper to an infield playing back, and you wait?
Yeah.
And then you don't run it out to score. It's, my goodness.
It was pretty brutal.
Yeah. But that's, you know, all that said, just dealing with that Vols lineup, and you see him again. They seem it's got to be exhausting. It's just they are just absolutely mashing the ball. So I think they're going to win it all. But Texas A&M is very good.
And that's going to be the matchup. It's an all SEC final here. The SEC, you know, this was basically the SEC ACC challenge in Omaha.
Wasn't much of a challenge.
And it was not much of a challenge. SEC finishes 5-0 against the ACC. So Texas A&M. After Florida took out Kentucky, Texas A&M takes out Florida, and that's the matchup in the national title series coming up on Saturday. So I don't believe Tennessee and Texas A&M played in the regular season. They did play down in Hoover.
For the one time,
and Tennessee won that game. So there's not a ton that you can take away from that, but Tennessee – and Texas A&M ending up where a lot of people thought they would, which is the College World Series final. And Tennessee with a chance to play for a national title. And, you know, I saw, you know, obviously Vol Twitter was elated yesterday when they punched their ticket and got to the final here. And some fans are like, this is the first time that Tennessee's been playing for a title in any sport that I've been a fan of. Like, some people were like, I've been a fan for Tennessee since 2009. They've never played for anything like this. So very, very fired up on Vol Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. I guess if you started right at 2009, man, that's tough. But you finally have a chance because, yeah, I mean, what? Pat Summitt's last great team with Candace Parker was 08, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's exciting stuff for sure. And, I mean, it's really impressive what they've done. Obviously, the first win, it could be totally different. They might be in Knoxville a couple days ago,
yep.
Right? If not for that comeback. But they've been, in the two games since, they've been clearly the better team, and they've been able to rest everyone. And so the whole pitching might be the undoing of Tennessee has not come to fruition yet. We'll see how it goes in this series.
We'll see how it goes, but – I mean, both Tennessee and Texas A&M, by the time the first pitch is thrown Saturday, are going to be in good shape. I mean, they're going to be rested. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to have their full complement of players available to them. So you're going to – I mean, it's best on best. You're going to see who the best team is here in a 2 out of 3 series. I mean, I would assume, you know, is Beam going Saturday? That would be my guess.
I don't
go Sunday?
Yeah, I don't. I think I'll just do it the same way. You could definitely make the case to go Saturday with him, but you know, it's like that's, you know, it's interesting though, because it's like, okay, why not try to win the two games, right? I mean, but the Stamos Causey thing, which has been, it really is just like Stamos, can you get an inning, you know,
and then go to Causey.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's been effective. That's going to be interesting. You can make the case, especially just the way – you make the case the way Seacrest is pitching. Like, you want him to be assured a start.
Yeah.
Now, again, you also could say, well, wouldn't it be great if it gets to Monday to have him? Let's see. So, that's – yeah, and that's the thing, though. I don't know. So, you're talking about a Wednesday game. I don't know that you're starting him – on Sunday, right? And it's a Sunday day game.
Yep.
That's for a college pitcher. So, yeah, so I think So I'm
be close, but borderline. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you definitely feel better about just, you know what, you got Monday. If we need Monday, and if not, then hopefully that's because we won. And thanks a lot, Xander. And exactly. You know, let's go do weird stuff in Omaha. So I don't know. Yeah, I think I'm going to guess that he's just going to keep going the same thing.
Same way.
Stamos, Causey. Yeah. And okay. Then Beam.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how that part of it plays out. And then can Tennessee's lineup keep it going? I mean, look, it was more of the same stuff yesterday. They've got guys 1 through 9 that can come up with some big hits. I will say, you know, it was 6-2, and it felt like it was probably over anyway. That last bomb that Blake Burke hit, I mean, it's just basically a flick of the wrist. Going down is a low slider. It wasn't like he let the hanging breaking ball. It was a low slider, and he just torched that
went
thing.
Went down right and out got it. Yep. Yeah, you let him extend his arms at all, it's just – yeah, you're in trouble.
Big trouble. 615-737-1025. The Vols have punched their ticket to the College World Series final. We'll take your reaction to that, your reaction to Tony Vitello and Tennessee making some history in Omaha. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. More on that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyes are here with you on this Thursday morning. The Vols have made history, punched their ticket to the College World Series final. They'll take on Texas A&M beginning on Saturday, playing for the national championship. You know, we've gone over the Tony Vitello success 7-minute rant that he covered a lot of different topics on. You know, obviously you're here now, so you're the number one overall seed, you're here, you're in the national championship series. So if you lost at this point, it would be very disappointing if you're a Tennessee fan.
Not successful.
I'm sure that we could get another rant from Vitello if somebody brings that up at the end of it. But
fail.
But I think the Omaha stuff, like, can you win when you get to Omaha? Can you break through there? I think that stuff's kind of done at this point. They've won three in a row, and they punched their ticket to the final. So this team has already answered a lot of those questions that we had heading into it. But now it's to the point where, like, going back to our conversation a couple of days ago with the fan base, I mean, this fan base is all in with Tony Vitello, with this team specifically. And the opportunity to finish the job here and win a national championship. You know, PK asked this to Gentry Estes the other day, and I thought it was a good question. Just if they pull it off, how much of an elevator is this for Tony Vitello? And not really with the Tennessee fan base, because he's kind of already there with the Tennessee fan base, but just in general, as a college baseball coach, when you start to think about the best coaches in the game, the entire picture around the program right now, they're at 58 wins. They win two here, they get 60, which is unbelievably hard to do in college baseball. What would this do for Vitello as sort of an elevator of his status if they're able to pull this off and win a national championship?
Yeah, well, look, I think in terms of being compared to other college baseball coaches, I think it's been a few years of him being on a short list, right?
When you factor in the whole picture, recruiting, but then, player development, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and taking that program, which just hadn't really done much ever, really. You know, it had some good stretches, brief stretches, and then turning them into this. So then your knock is, okay, well, what's going on in the postseason? What the heck happened in 22, right, with that team? Right, but so now you exceed what you are last year to get to Omaha, really.
Yep.
And then this year, you exceed, like, you may not have a first-round pitcher, and you have a lot of you guys in your rotation are no rounds, and not rotation, but in your arsenal, you know, and you do have an incredibly talented lineup. But I would still say that, like, that it's an overachieving year. So it's not just, like, he has the most talented team ever, and it's just like, you know, go out there and – I mean, he's been talking a lot in Omaha about, like, I follow their lead, but I think that's more like their poise and maturity, right? But also, like, I appreciate, you know, when he'll say stuff like that some coaches may not, you know, may not be willing to say.
Yeah.
He's I mean, if they win it, then yeah, he's I'm trying to think of like a comparison. Obviously, like Tim Corbin, the guy here in town, has been a standard setter in terms of a program and has done everything, you know,
yep,
for a long time. So he's right there. So I guess we can just make it a rivalry discussion again now,
so,
right? Like,
yeah,
it's there's the program discussion, there's the coach discussion. But, he's – so if you want to make Corbin, you know – well, let's make Corbin Tom Izzo, okay? Well, Vitello is Danny Hurley.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. I mean, it's like he's the young guy who has a lot of runway left and is at the top of the sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's – like I said, with Tennessee, the fan base, even if they lose this series, I mean, they're all in on Vitello. Now, if they win it, then it just kind of takes it into, you know, folk hero status even more. So it's less about the fan base itself because he's already transformed. I mean, everything about Tennessee baseball is transformed. Go to Lindsey Nelson Stadium 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and look at it. Look at a typical SEC game night atmosphere. I mean, it was all right, but it was nothing like it is now. And then you got the improvements coming to the ballpark and the investment and Danny White and all that stuff. So they've totally transformed the program that way to the point where, you know, we asked a couple of years ago, is this going to be sustainable? Well, I think we kind of have our answer right now. Like, as long as Vitello is there, this is sustainable. They're going to win, and they're going to win at a high level. You know, what's going to be interesting is if and when the day comes at some point when Vitello's no longer there, whether that's 20 years from now or whether that's here in a couple seasons when somebody else snatches him away.
When he's on the other UT next year.
It could be on the other UT next year. You know, is this like a program transformation to the point where they're going to be a high-level college baseball program from here on out? I don't know the answer to that. But right now, like, it's pretty clear everything is going right for Tennessee baseball from a on-the-field results standpoint. I mean, they have won more than anybody in college baseball the last 4 years. If they can finish it off with a national championship here, you're into elite status that way with a championship. The recruiting going exceptionally well. They got the number one class in America coming into next year. So, like, literally everything you want to point to right now with Tennessee baseball is at an elite level.
Yeah.
And he deserves all the credit for that.
No doubt. Yeah, and the long-term questions, I mean, I don't know what college sports is going to be.
Yeah, no clue.
What you do see, I think, in all the sports to some extent, there's some stability at the very top of football, but just the way these rosters change. I mean, like, look at Florida. Florida is a great program, which then had a very disappointing year, which then all of a sudden turned into almost getting to the final series. But, like, LSU is still probably – I mean, who's the gold standard programs of the SEC would be, I think, probably LSU and Vanderbilt,
yeah,
right? I mean,
I would
now
say
South
so.
Carolina, like, 10 years ago, you'd say them. But,
yeah,
what I mean, it changes. I mean, it's an incredibly talented, competitive league. So there's going to be ups and downs. Like you mentioned, the number one class – that's true. Now, I've heard some people say this is the first class he's going to have where he's a bunch of these dudes are just going to the pros.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's going to be, oh, and that happens. I mean, ask Vanderbilt. Like, they've had some, you know, some kids they thought maybe they're going to get, and it's like, no, and then that just totally changes. So, like, there will be ups and downs, but, yeah. I mean, certainly while he's there and they are – Lindsey Nelson is already under transformation underway, but more to come and all that. There's no reason that they shouldn't be right there for as long as he wants to be around.
So let me ask you this. Is this the best lineup that we have seen in college baseball? Because, I mean, a lot of people are going to point to Tennessee a couple years ago. I believe, and I think I saw this stat yesterday, when Burke hit his home run yesterday, that is five Tennessee players that have 20 or more homers, which is the first time that's ever happened. So there's a lot of different ways you could view that, and I know that you don't have like some running list in your head of all-time college baseball lineups, but, you know,
the one that had Will Clark in it for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, it's pretty darn good.
Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, there's been some pretty good lineups, pretty good hitters over the years. But, like, the point is, like, 2 years ago, that was the best lineup in the history of Tennessee baseball. People still talk about that being maybe the most talented team in college baseball history, and they didn't finish it off. this lineup, when you look at the numbers of what they've actually done, like if you wanted to, you could stack it up with any lineup that's ever played the game.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where, in terms of achievement and just watching them play, you'd have to say they have to be in the discussion, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's like down the road.
How
does that end up? It's wild to me, especially, and I understand that he can be an adventure at second base. But if someone gets Christian Moore in the second round, God bless you.
Yes.
Good job. I don't buy that.
I just cannot
buy that at all. I think Tears is he's ceiling stuck. My goodness. He is so talented. And obviously Burke. Mike Wilson thinks that Dreiling might end up the best. So it's an absolute murderer's row. So, yeah, that's the thing, too, is like I don't know where they are in the total number at this point, but if they could have gone to the loser's bracket, they could have been, broken the all-time home run record.
Yeah.
I guess maybe they could still do it if there are three games left.
Yeah.
If anybody knows off the top of their head, I'll find it. They were 15 back going in. How many home runs have they hit? In three games, they've hit.
They're within five, strikeable, right? You'd have to really start launching some, I think. But yeah,
get to the loser's bracket, and you can break the freaking record. But no, it's a good question. I'm starting to Google this. It's like Auburn with Bo Jackson and Josh Donaldson. Right. And it's like
that's the thing. Like the likelihood is are they going to have how many high level pro players are they going to have out of this lineup? I don't know. I think Christian Moore could probably hit the ball pretty well at the major league level once he gets there, be my guess. Got a lot of guys I think they could probably pop it pretty good. Now, are you going to have like the superstar in Major League Baseball? I don't know about that, but.
Right, because that's some of these, like Barry Bonds, okay, yeah. Alex Bregman, sure. Yeah. And then there were some maybe other good players with them. So how does that match up to a bunch of good? And again, Christian Moore could be a major league star. I don't know. The guy is pretty good. He's a problem at the plate.
No doubt about it. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Vols punching their ticket to Omaha and playing for the national title against Texas A&M beginning on Saturday. More on that coming up next. Also, some developments that are going to upset Joe Rexroad at 6:30 in the morning. We'll do that too. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game. We're sorry but not sorry. Stop screwing up college basketball, college sports.
You sports murderer, you.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have the best and worst things in sports coming up at 6:45. And I am realizing, as I'm talking about this, that I may have just hijacked a worst thing in sports from Joe Rexroad, what we're about to talk about. But we're going to talk about it anyway. This from a Yahoo Sports story that I saw yesterday. I believe Ross Dellinger put this out. I'll just read the first couple of graphs here. Quote, college basketball moved one step closer this week to an expanded NCAA men's basketball tournament. NCAA officials on Wednesday presented to Division I conference commissioners at least two models of an expanded field, one with an additional four teams and another with an additional eight teams, commissioners told Yahoo Sports. Officials declined to speak publicly about the models. The models would expand the 68-field team to 72 or 76 with additional at-large selections as well as at least one additional first four site. Any expansion would begin at the earliest in the 2025-26 season. If the men's event expands, the women's tournament is likely to undergo a similar expansion. This is from Yahoo Sports yesterday. Joe Rexroad, we've talked about this. We've discussed the possibility of this eventually happening with the basketball tournaments in March on the men's and women's side. And now it seems like there are some actionable steps to that being the case coming up here in a couple of years with possible expansion from 68 to 72 or potentially even 76. Your reaction as a college basketball purist when you read this story?
Well, the good news here is yesterday I was in the New York Times building pretending I worked at the New York Times. Got an amazing tour, by the way.
That's good.
It's wow. But with our college team, so a couple of them were like, actually, no offense, Ross Dellinger. Dude, nothing he reported here is wrong, But there's a strong possibility that it doesn't happen. Now, that again, that's now.
Yeah.
So I'm not freaking out about it. Also, I'm not freaking out about, like, okay, if they go like 72, okay, and they have to have more first four games. I mean, I think it's dumb, but again, the perfect tournament has already been eliminated, right? Like, yeah. we've already moved on from the perfect tournament, which is when it expanded to 64 in 1985.
Yeah.
And we did that for, let's see, when did the first four come in? Probably like 2011, I want to say.
Around there, yeah.
Yeah, so we did that. We had the perfect tournament for 2011. So for 26 seasons, 26 years, we had the perfect tournament. That's a pretty long time for college sports to not screw something up.
It is.
And they've already screwed up. I'm more, you know, as we've talked about, I'm more concerned about the makeup of the tournament. The, you know, the call out Greg Sankey every chance I get on this. This idea that, you know, the power leagues, you know, bigger power leagues, we got to have more representation. No, you do not. No, you.
We all wanted to see Vanderbilt in the tournament this year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Like, really need that, you know, 7-11 in the ACC Florida State team in the NCAA tournament. At the expense of the teams that every year there are a couple that completely capture America, like St. Peter's, et cetera, that's what I'm afraid of and angry about when it even gets brought up. This, okay, 72, okay.
More. I don't even like this.
Well, I don't either, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if it has to be something, if you're going to nibble at it a little bit and just go there and keep the general framework of the tournament,
yeah.
Okay, I'll live with that. If we're going to, you know, do the, well, now the Power Five has gone off, done its own thing, and now they have their own tournament, something like that, that just kills the whole spirit of the thing. That's my fear.
Yeah, I mean, what we don't need – is to eventually end up with 96 teams in the tournament and this thing to be forever, or what you said, where there's teams that have no business playing in the NCAA tournament, but because they're in a power, I mean, I guess at that point will be like a power two, power three league, they get in there because of all the money that's flowing around in this thing. I mean, I read this yesterday, and I'm with you. Like, I didn't freak out about it, but I think I saw Josh Pate, who does his college football show, put this out like as a response to this, and was just like, Can we not leave anything alone? Like, do we have to ruin everything? Like, can we just leave something alone where we don't have to just totally abandon everything that is and has been good about college sports? And apparently the answer is no, we can't do that.
Right.
We have to ruin everything.
Yeah. And the NCAA in particular, just take the NCAA. Like, this is all they have anymore. They don't have any power.
Yep.
They can't enforce a single rule. It wasn't that long ago. There seriously was a cream cheese rule, okay?
Yeah,
like,
there was.
You can have a certain amount of cream cheese on a bagel that you give to a student athlete.
Yeah.
And now they have zero rules they can enforce, basically. So, like, this is it. This is the NCAA tournament is what they have. So you should understand how great it is, how it's the one thing we don't get mad at you about because you do it well, and it's a great thing. So, no, by all means, let the TV people, you know, take over and screw the whole thing up.
Well,
sounds great.
And to your point, like, even if you're like me, who I would say is a casual, at best, college basketball observer, I recognize the greatness of the tournament. Like, the tournament, everybody would agree, is one of the great things in American sports.
I would hope so.
I mean,
I would hope everybody would agree.
Yeah, like, it's pretty clearly, I mean, it's awesome. So, When you draw in casual people that way, I mean, we talked about, I mean, the ratings were just outstanding for the last tournament. We've talked about this. So the idea that this continues to be a thing, and you mentioned Greg Sankey, that there's serious consideration to basically just blowing this thing up is maddening. Like, the college football stuff is one thing, but at the end of, like, the college football stuff, it's going to happen. I mean, they've already expanded the playoff to 12. They're going to go right to 14. Eventually, they're going to probably end up at 16 or 20 or whatever it ends up being. So, all that stuff's going to happen. I've realized I'm fighting a losing battle there. I hope that, like, in time, some sense prevails here where they, if they do make some changes, hopefully this is it, where it gets to, like, 72 or 76. Anything beyond that, then it's just ridiculous. But I'm with you. I'm scared that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, it's. I guess it matters less now because, like, when people, I mean, like, I fill out my bracket, I guess, like, probably most people, which is, like, on a computer now, right? Like, you just go through and hit the beep, 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 hit your picks.
Yep.
But, like, that's part of it, too, is, like, a bracket where it fits on the bracket.
Yeah.
And also, like you said, like, how many weeks are you playing this thing? Like, with this and college football, it's like...
You're going to finish in May?
Right. Or, like, do you have to... I mean, do you have to have conference tournaments? I mean, I like them. They're fun. I love the SEC tournament. But it's like, if you're going to do this and basically add a weekend, how is that going to work? It's just like... In fact, this is my rant for later. But, I mean, because we were talking a lot the last few days about the college football playoff, and I'm just reminded of some things that are just... infuriating about it, but yeah, like just keep the general framework where it's like, okay, I guess so this would be 72. I guess there's like another site they would have for okay, so you have Dayton, and so I guess it'd be like a West Coast or, you know, more Western site for the other first four stuff. Okay,
welcome to Reno.
Yeah, so if you get those games done right at the beginning of the week, and then it's the first, second, third week in the way it is, I can live with that.
Yeah,
I'll complain about the first four games. I'll still probably watch them.
I will not. Now that is one thing about the tournament I have no interest in is the first four stuff.
There's some good games sometimes.
I'm sure.
You know. We've seen first four teams get to the Final Four now.
We have.
VCU.
I got a texture that says, you can't tell me there's even 32 great teams, definitely not 64 good teams. It's already extremely too heavy. See, we say that, and then people make runs to the Elite Eight and Final Four, and it's like, well, if you're going by that model, they would never have a chance.
So I'll go back to 1985, which is pretty wild. So that's the first year they moved to 64. Now, you go back to, like, 75, it was like just the conference champions. 75, they expanded it to beyond conference champions. It used to just be conference champions, but it was like 20-some teams. So 75, they get to 32. And then in 79, it got to 40. That's the year Magic and Bird played the national title. So people said that exact same thing in 1985. Like, really, 64 teams? And that year, 11-seed Villanova, like, came out of nowhere, the Big East. They were a... You know, doormat in that conference, which at the time was amazing, and they beat freaking Georgetown in the title game.
Yeah,
by hitting like every shot. And yeah, some of their players were on cocaine, all that stuff. Okay, but that, you know, regardless, it was 1985. Like, what can I tell you?
They played well.
Yeah, they were. They
regardless,
were
really, they played well.
They were flying high out there. But point being, you know, yeah. Look, 64 is perfect. If we're sitting here in 2024 saying like 64 was too much. I think it's been proved over and over again to be perfect, and again, it is opportunity for all the leagues. I mean, that's those conference championships. I get into that. Some people don't, but I get into the auto bid league conference championship games, which are amazing. That was some of the, and they all have that opportunity to be part of this thing up for grabs, and it's a huge deal. For those schools and for those players and coaches involved, that's a huge part of this too. And that's where the Power Five crap just, yo, well, our league is now 37 teams and we got to have at least 22 bids. No, that's not how it works. How many good teams do you have?
It is time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your best things, your worst things on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com, 615-737-1025. More on that. Coming up next, tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Sounds take on the Durham Bulls. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Caudill Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
The best and worst of the sports week, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It's time!
This is the worst.
You look like you're feeling sorry for yourself.
I believe in miracles, yes! Unbelievable.
He's one of one. He is him.
This is a Coke bottle, it's not a crystal ball.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Okay, let's go.
It is time for the best things, the worst things in sports. We'll take your best, your worst on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, kick us off with your best and worst things in the world of sports.
Well, hate to be obvious here. I was trying to figure out how to, you know, maybe pick a person. I talked about Xander Sechrist earlier, but the Vols getting to the final series. I will highlight Sechrist. The way he's finishing his career is incredible. Drew Beam had been struggling here late, which was part of the, I don't know, do the Vols have enough of the mound? He was tremendous. The defensive plays, especially with Ensley and Tears smashing into the wall, Christian Moore comes out and says, hey, how about I'll just hit for the cycle right away here? The comeback against Florida State, just the lineup, I mean, it's, you know, Kirby, Connell, I mean, like, it's just, they're at max, you know, achievement right now. They are all things are operational, and it's something to behold when they put it all together. So the Vols playing for the Natty is an easy best. The worst for me is just the NBA Finals, the NBA playoffs. It was bad.
It sucked.
Which sucks because, I mean, I'm an NBA fan. You're an NBA fan. Every time you talk about the NBA, somebody will be in the text line like, NBA, rah, 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 you know. And I like those people to shut up this time of year because it's like an awesome series that we can talk about. But, no, I agree with you. The NBA sucks right now. The finals was awful.
Worst playoffs I can remember.
And, you know, like, good for Jason Tatum. I mean, he's fine. I like Jaylen Brown. I like their team, really, actually. Now Jason Tatum is like doing like the Garnett stuff. Like do something original, man. Like it all sucks. So that's my worst.
It was not good. Nick Kieser, your best and worst things in the world of sports.
Well, something that we can probably all agree on. What's great is that the Stanley Cup Final is still going on. We didn't think that would happen. At least I didn't. But Connor McDavid also with 42 points so far. He's got to catch Wayne Gretzky to get to 47 and higher to beat that record in the final or just in the playoffs. So that's crazy just in of itself. Finals are still going. My worst, and this happened a week ago on Thursday after our show. So Utah said they are the Utah Hockey Club.
I saw that.
And debuted their jerseys. They are god awful. They look exactly like, or similar to at least, the Hawks from the Mighty Ducks movie, I thought,
they
immediately.
Do. You know, they do kind of look like that.
And they looked like the couple of junior league team jerseys as well. I think it's like the Kootenay Ice, something like that. I mean, there's all kinds of jersey comps. Milwaukee actually had fun with it, saying that they stole what their jersey concept was, but their jerseys suck, and they need a name.
Well, the name sucks.
Like it's terrible.
We're the Utah Hockey Club. Great. That's awesome.
So, yeah. Way to go. Like, it's not soccer.
Yeah, this exactly. is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, I think they're going to probably revisit it in a year or two.
They have to vote again in 1 year, yeah. Yes.
But
why?
Just come up with a name. Like, it's – what's wrong with the Yeti? There we go. The Utah Yeti. There
I think
go.
That's going to be it, honestly.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like –
it's better than the Utah Hockey Club, I can tell you that.
It's following in the footsteps of the Kraken a little bit there.
I like it.
Man, that's a ridiculous idea. Let's go a year with this. It'll be the branding. I mean, and then you're going to just completely change it. Why? What?
Yeah, it's –
that's a good worst. And a good best. McDavid is insane.
McDavid is – there are three guys – well, not even three guys. There are three playoff seasons with more point totals in front of him right now. Gretzky in 84-85 with 47 points. Some guy named Mario Lemieux in 90-91 with 44 points. Gretzky again in 87-88 with 43. And then there's Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
He should win the Conn Smythe regardless of if they win or lose. Like he's the playoff MVP.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And remember, like early in the playoffs, I was like, man, McDavid's not exactly, you know, he's fine, but he's not.
He just wasn't scoring.
Yeah, he wasn't shooting, wasn't scoring. It's absurd. And it's the thing. Yeah. Unlike the NBA, thank you, hockey.
Yes.
For giving us some drama. Now I'm really fascinated by this next game. Also, Dreisaitl hasn't scored a goal in this series.
He's not.
Yet.
No.
What if he gets going a little bit?
That's the thing. Like if you're Florida, it's still difficult for me to think that Edmonton is going to be able to pull off winning four in a row. Like I think. You know, everybody now thinks Edmonton's going to win game six. which makes me a little hesitant to think maybe they're not going to win game
Panthers
six.
Panthers 4, Oilers 2.
Right, right. Yeah. So, like everybody is picking Edmonton to win game six and for this thing to get back to seven. But I will say, like, I will leave open the idea of, like, what if Draisaitl gets going? Then Florida might be in some trouble at that point. McDavid's my best thing, too. Quickly, I'll get to my worst. Rory McIlroy. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Had a chance to make a putt to save par, which, had he made it, would have gotten to a playoff against Bryson DeChambeau for the U.S. Open. It was like a three-foot putt, and he just choked it. Left the grounds without speaking to the media, taking a few weeks off from golf. Clearly, like, it has affected him, but as I was watching it live, and when he missed that putt, I was just like, Rory, man, that's not good, man. And then DeChambeau, to his credit, he was hanging out with Teresa Walker yesterday, showing off the U.S. Open trophy. But great shot out of the bunker to get up and down and then win the U.S. Open, his second one. But Rory, that was a pretty massive choke job.
I mean, and what I think he was like, what, 496? Yeah. 496 from that distance?
Yeah, he was 496 from 496.
And then, yeah.
Ouch.
Tough one. And then, you know, tearing out of the parking lot, I mean, Scottie Scheffler gets arrested for apparently, like, not doing anything wrong. I mean, Rory turned out that he was driving about 50 in a golf course parking lot.
Dragging
people. That's not a good idea.
Not great. He was ready to get out of there. Scheffler got up and talked to the media when he got arrested. You can get up there when you miss a putt. It's all good. But not good stuff there from Rory McIlroy. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Matthew from Jolton says, the best thing is something I just found out. The Toronto Maple Leafs have never won more than three rounds in a single playoff run. Their last cup win, there was only two rounds to get to the final. This is from Matthew from Jolton.
That is funny.
A lot of people taking some shots at the Maple Leafs. Hey?
It never gets old, you know?
It never gets old.
Like Chicago Bears. Make fun of them, too.
That's right.
Much as you can.
That's right. I got an honorable mention for the worst, which I just now thought about, which I probably should have done as my worst anyway. Did you see the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade yesterday?
Yeah.
So L.A. signs him to an 8-year deal last year, or seven. I can't remember which one it was. And then immediately before his no-trade kicks in on July 1st, so got a no-trade clause coming up here in about 2 weeks, they trade him to Washington yesterday straight up for Darcy Kemper, who also has not been very good in Washington, but at least he's only got like three more years left on his deal. I have no idea why the Washington Capitals
look at
this and say, we'll do that. We'll take on that the rest of that
contract. 7 years of that?
Salary retained. Like, Dubois, at this point, has been in Winnipeg. He's been in Columbus. He's been in L.A. Like, clearly, he doesn't fit in anywhere. Like, how many different places does he have to be? And we talked about this as soon as he signed that contract last year. They gave him this big deal. And I was like, that is the dumbest thing. It's just a stupid decision to sign that contract. And then they trade him less than a year later.
So, they
good for them.
They made up for it. Yeah. There you go.
I can't believe Washington took that. And there's like no salary retention.
Yeah, how is there
no
retention on that?
Nothing. They just, we'll take it. Why not?
I think they just know that they'll suck in a few years. I don't know, but still.
But even
you can suck without taking on that contract.
Exactly. You can suck and then like have, you know, young players and not have that albatross around your neck.
On top of that, they have a backup goalie as their starter right now, too.
Yeah, it's not going to go very well for Washington, I don't think. I'm sure Ovechkin's just thrilled. Pierre-Luc Dubois.
That's a good way
play
to
with them.
Wind it down. Yeah.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Speaking of hockey, a goalie trade in the NHL yesterday involving a team that we've talked a whole lot about in relation to the Nashville Predators. We'll get into that, what it means for the Predators and UC Soros coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.